This is Booth 46, live from Petorino's. Not just in the heart of the Loop, but the heart of the Loop. Surrounded by theater, culture, and Chicago's movers and shakers. Each episode brings you, as Irv Kupcinet used to say,
the lively art of conversation.
Local vibes, real conversations, and fresh ideas for experiencing the city. So pull up a chair, lean in, and let's dive into the stories that shape Chicago.
From Petorino's Restaurant, another Booth 46 with a very special guest. Chaz Ebert is here. Well, you know what? Chaz, that yes. Round of applause was not loud enough for you again, Chaz Ebert.
Well, thank you. That is so, this is unbelievable. I'm so glad that we have Booth 46 because it's in the tradition of Chicago and the Pump Room and
well, we could talk about
everybody.
That.
Okay,
yeah, I want to talk about that with you, but first, I want to talk about your book.
Okay.
It's time to give a feck.
F-E-C-K.
Yes. Explain what this book is all about.
The book is about bringing more kindness and compassion into the world.
What?
And FEC.
Can we do that?
Absolutely. FEC stands for forgiveness, empathy, compassion, and kindness. And so it wasn't just it is a catchy title, but it actually has very deep, profound meaning.
And what led you to, at some point in time, to think, I have got to award people, celebrate people who stand for FEC?
It was just at some point last year. Well, the book was published, I think, within the last 2 years. But at some point, my publicist came and said, your book has made number 6 on the indie bestseller list. What would you like to do to sell more books? I said, I don't want to do anything to sell more books. I want people to actually live these principles. It wasn't just...
led you to think in the first place that these principles are important and what the acronym is are the principles? Why those principles?
Okay, now I'm going to try to say this without crying because when I wrote this book, this was not the book I set out to write. I was writing a book about movies, a little bit about my life with my late husband, Roger Ebert, and for some reason... I started writing about empathy first because Roger said that movies are a machine that generates empathy that allows you to look into the lives or step into the shoes of someone of a different race or age or gender or socioeconomic status and allows you to empathize with that person and perhaps become compassionate and want to perform acts of kindness for someone different than you. And so instead of writing about movies, I started writing about empathy, and then I started writing about, you know, compassion, how to bring more into the world. My answer is this. I have no idea why I wrote this book. And at the time, I even asked myself, but I just sort of trust the universe. I said, there must be a reason for it. At some point, it's... Because at the time that I started writing the book, I thought the world was in a much kinder space than it is now. Now the world is a little more divided, or it seems the nation, the world, whatever.
All the above,
And cruel, you know, I think there's some cruelty in the world that I didn't detect in the world before. And so now I know why I wrote the book today. Because it's very relevant to today. But at the time I was writing it, this was not the book that I was started out
to
write.
So most authors that I talk to, and I've authored books myself, of course.
Yes.
So I sit down at the computer, and this is the chapter I'm going to do. It sounds like the book almost wrote itself. If I'm making any sense.
No, you are making sense, because I hate saying it like this because I don't want it to sound like woo-woo, but It seems like I was just channeling part of the book from somewhere. I don't know. There are some chapters in the
book.
Before
we began,
all right.
You said there's one paragraph.
Yes.
In particular. Yes. And then I want to read you something.
Okay.
That you wrote. We'll exchange readings.
Oh, I love that. I love that.
But there was something in particular, so go ahead.
I think that this will give people an idea, just one paragraph. Giving a feck is a unifying journey that begins with forgiveness, the reduction of inner barriers and weight. It moves into empathy, the feeling state, and then it grows into compassion, the willingness to do something, and culminates in kindness, putting all the principles into action. This is just a very short thing telling you kind of what the book is
all
about. Yes.
And we'll talk more about that.
Okay.
Here's what I want to read to you.
Okay.
It's your dedication in the book.
Oh.
To Roger, mm-hmm. whose capacity for empathy knew no bounds. And to the universe, to the universal source of love that binds us all together.
Oh. Yes.
You write in the book a lot about Roger.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know him. I knew people who did.
Yes.
I had met him, but I mm-hmm. can't say I knew him. Mm-hmm. He was clearly very special.
Yes.
He clearly left us way too early.
Yes.
And for those who may not know, we're talking about legendary film critic Roger Ebert at the movies with Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert. Siskel and Ebert at the movies. There were several incarnations.
Yes, yes.
More at the movies. At the movies again. I mean, there are several of these. What was he truly like?
Well, the first word that comes to mind when I think of him is brilliant. He was a very smart man. Both he and Gene Siskel were very smart. I think that's why they loved changing barbs with each other.
Did they really not like each other?
Well, when they first met, Roger was at the Chicago Sun-Times. Gene was at the Tribune. And
right.
back then, if you were at a different newspaper, you were a real competitor. I mean, now, if we even have a newspaper, you're just very fortunate. But back then, they used to bump heads, and they did not like each other. In fact, when they would get into the elevator, they would look all around because they didn't want to be in the same elevator with each other.
Which I'm sure they were a lot because there were, at that time, movie screenings you would attend.
That's right.
And everyone would go at 3 o'clock or whatever time the movie screening was.
Exactly.
So you're bound to bump into another person going to the screening.
That's right. But I have to tell you, I'm very happy that over time, they grew to love each other like brothers. But it's funny that when they really liked each other and respected each other's opinion, that didn't make them less competitive. It made them more competitive with each other. Yes. Because they wanted to persuade the other one that they were right. And there's one really famous episode on the show when Gene gave something. I don't know whether it was a thumbs up or a thumbs down. By the end of the show, Roger had convinced him to change his grade on the movie, and he said, I never thought I'd do this, but I think you're right, you know, about the movie. And that was like a victory for if either one of them could make the other one change their mind.
Now, you're a famous award-winning attorney in your own right.
Thank you.
Have had a marvelous career for people who don't know. Mm-hmm. Were you into movies when you met Roger, or did Roger turn you on to movies in a way that you hadn't thought about?
No, I always loved movies from the time I was a kid. And one of the things that I loved about movies is, you know, as a kid, I grew up on the Near West Side of Chicago. And at that time, kids had more freedom to go out and catch the bus. And at a certain age, our mom and dad let a group of us, my brothers and sisters and friends, we could get together, catch the bus, and go down to Staten Lake and see the movies by ourselves when I was like maybe 9 years old. And that's a freedom that today, if you see a 9-year-old kid on the street, their parent could get arrested if they're not with someone else.
Maybe, yeah.
But so the movies were our, that was our ticket to freedom. And so I always loved going to the movies.
What kind of movies?
Back then.
Yeah.
Martial arts movies.
What?
We loved all the karate movies.
Would that be like
Bruce Lee?
Yeah. Oh my God, I wouldn't have guessed that.
Enter the Dragon. But I also loved movies that were, had something to do, like, there was one movie called Tick, Tick, Tick. And it was about a sheriff, and it was about racial problems in a small southern town. I also loved those movies, those kind of movies. But anyway, I know, and people, that's one thing that people don't know about me. I actually used to, I earned like several belts in taekwondo. I like martial arts.
I don't know that. So what you should have called the book, it's time to give a feck, F-E-C-K, and peppermint ice cream.
Oh.
Because nothing will change your life like peppermint ice cream.
Or forgiveness. Forgiveness changes your life more. You know why? Some people think that forgiveness is for the other person who wronged them. Forgiveness can be for that, but the biggest part of forgiveness, it takes the weight off of your shoulder. You're no longer carrying that anger and resentment around. It is much easier said than done. But you, and sometimes when you forgive, it may not be a one and done. You may have to forgive that person or that situation more than once. I can only tell you what happened to me.
I was carrying the
resentment around a long time. So much so that I thought of horrible things I wanted to do to this one organization. And I got tired of it. I got tired of it. I got down on my knees and said a prayer because someone told me, I asked someone, how can I truly forgive? And they said, whether you're religious or not, I'm going to tell you what's going to be really powerful. Get down on your knees and say a prayer and tell whoever, whether you call God or Buddha, whomever you pray to, the universe, say, I want to forgive that person and I want to have this weight lifted off of my shoulders. And I did that one night. And I'm not kidding. After carrying this resentment around for probably a couple of years,
yeah.
I woke up the next morning. Everything seemed sunnier and bright. I jumped out of bed. I was happy. The sun was shining. I felt so light, and I couldn't believe it. It was like magic.
So, for example, if you're fired and you don't think you deserved that to happen.
Correct.
I can see where years later, you'd, maybe not every day, every minute, but frequently think about that person who did it or the company and getting over that I can see to be a very difficult thing.
Difficult. But you know what? Once I forgave, I think my heart opened up. I had room both in my heart and in my head to put more good things in there. Who wants to carry around all that junk? And you know what? There's a saying that you let people live rent-free in your head. And sometimes while you're carrying a resentment around, they are living their best lives and they've forgotten all about you. So,
empathy.
Empathy is the one
that I started
with.
And you go into a lot
with.
Of detail explaining actually what empathy is. I'm guessing you did that because people you think may not know.
Well, I did it because empathy is so beautiful, because empathy is how you can live in a society with people who are different than you. If you empathize, if you learn a little bit about someone else's life, if you take an interest in maybe there's someone you don't like and you may hear something about their background that explains a little bit about how they are, it doesn't mean that you become a doormat. You don't have to become a doormat, but you can maybe have a little more compassion for that person. But
empathy is also different. You explain in the book, actually,
yeah.
that your words, empathy and compassion, are different from one another.
Yes.
And I'm now paraphrasing. These are not your words. But empathy is putting yourself in someone else's shoes.
Yeah.
Which people, again, that's easier said than done.
But that's why Roger thought that movies were a very kind of a, almost like a visceral experience in watching a movie about someone whose way of life may be different. Like, the movie that I saw was about a little girl in Mongolia who was, I think she took care of a camel. It was the movie is called
What?
The Story of the Weeping Camel. Oh my God, I love this movie.
Or it could be called One Hump or Two.
No, but I love this movie so much. And I learned about a part of life that I didn't even know existed, but it made me want to learn more about people from that part of the world. It made me want to learn more about their way of life. And then I actually ended up meeting some of the people from that part of the world, and I had we just sort of clicked. We had a better understanding because of seeing that movie.
Do you think that you're watching the Academy Awards and you hear actors all the time talk about how movies can bring us together? Do you believe that's true?
I do.
Or is that overstated?
Well, it depends on the movie, and it depends on how open you are to it. There's a movie that I'm going to mention that I know a lot of people have seen. It came out a long time ago, so maybe not. I mean, not everybody has seen it, but you've heard of it. Schindler's List.
Of course.
Schindler's List helped open up a lot of people, made them, and talk about empathy. That movie was one movie where even people who I know wouldn't have been so empathetic to some of the people in the movie, but you came out of that movie, and even months afterwards, you heard people say how it changed their lives, how it changed the way they thought, how it changed the way they looked at other people, how it made them more receptive and more patient with certain people. So
we're going, we did F, E, C.
C, compassion. Yeah, compassion.
Are we lacking that now?
Don't even get me started.
I guess that's a yes.
That's a yes. Yes, I do think we need more compassion in the world now. But I have to tell you, even people that I disagree with, I try to have compassion in a conversation. This is what I would like to do. I would like to have dinners around the country where we have people on one side of the table who are maybe Republicans and one Democrats on the other side, maybe independents in the middle to provide a buffer.
Yeah.
And actually talk to people and say, if they say something that we think is, that we strongly disagree with, instead of saying, oh, I don't agree with that, I'd like to ask, why do you think that? What does that say to you? How do you put that into action? What is it that you've seen in life or experience that causes you to do or say that?
Are you concerned about the divisiveness of our society?
I am, absolutely. I cannot lie. I am concerned. It seems to be getting worse rather than better.
And we did F, E, C. K is the last letter here in your acronym.
Kindness, I love. That's the action part of FEC. It makes you want to do something for someone that you have compassion for, that you've taken the time to empathize with and understand, or maybe that you've taken the time to forgive. That's a big healing journey.
Do you think that, so there have been studies that have been done that demonstrate that when you volunteer, for example.
Yes.
I'll go back to the first George Bush. I think he called it 1,000...
Points of Light.
Yeah.
I've gone to the 1,000 Points of Light. I was invited.
Of course you were.
No.
Did you meet George Bush?
I have.
Did you meet their dog, Millie? No.
But actually, at the Points of Light, I met the son, George Bush, the second president.
Who became the president.
Who became the president,
yeah,
yes.
Right.
Yeah. Because when I was invited, I think his father had passed already.
Okay.
Or maybe he didn't.
I don't know.
But I went to Kennebunkport and to one of the retreats.
Then he probably didn't pass at that point. If it was in Kennebunkport rather than Texas. But in any which case, the point is that volunteering...
10,000, is it 1,000 or 10,000 points of light? 10,000 points of light or 1,000 points of light?
It ought to be 10,000 if it's not.
Yeah.
So studies have demonstrated that the person who does the volunteering benefits more than what you're volunteering for.
There are studies that show that your physiology actually changes.
Right.
Your body is flooded with endorphins. You get all kind of neurotransmitters
like
that help you. Serotonin and dopamines that make you feel like just a well-being. And it actually reduces the cortisol levels in your body.
Which is the
stress hormone.
Yep.
It reduces inflammation.
Which makes us live longer, ultimately.
Yes.
Who would have thought?
Who would think that?
Yeah.
Yes.
Because you're doing good for others.
Yes. Even it makes me smile when you even say
and
that.
And you are smiling as I'm talking to you about it. So
I
do
love
we,
it.
As a society, are we, oh my gosh, I'll say it, selfish? In that many don't do that.
Okay. So I start with, in trying to understand, there's a part in the book where I say, I wish that everyone, every child, deserves to be loved, and every child has not been loved. I was very fortunate in that I came from a household. I say my mother was so kind and so compassionate, and I swear when my mother walked into the room, she brought the sunshine with her. I took a picture one day, and the sun was beaming into the room, and it was shining only on my mother. I said, why didn't it shine on the rest of us? Maybe the universe knows something about her that, and it
oh,
knows something about us, too.
Oh, I can see it shining on you, actually.
Anyway, yeah, I love it. I love these, you know, during the pandemic, people, when we couldn't see each other, and the people who were in nursing homes or assisted living facilities, there were a group of people who used to take pets, dogs or cats, hold them up to the window, or children, hold them up.
Yes.
So even though you couldn't see them, you were separated by glass, it just helped reduce stress. It helped make people feel better.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there are so many ways that we can do good in this world. So many little things. People think that you have to have a lot of money. No, it doesn't take that. In fact, when I was in, I forget, the third grade or the fifth grade, I told my teacher, we were reading about the McCormicks, the Rockefellers, the Mellons, and my teacher was asking us what we wanted to be when we grew up. I raised my hand. I said, I want to be a philanthropist.
You remember that?
I remember.
And you knew the word.
No, let me tell you why.
You were in the third grade? You knew
it was. That's why I said I don't remember whether it was the third grade or the fifth grade.
Either way.
But let me tell you why I remember that. Because my teacher came, and she was so kind, but she said, darling, you can't be a philanthropist. I said, why not? She said, because you don't have any money. I was so dispirited. I went home and told my mother, and my mother said, you don't have to call yourself a philanthropist. You do good things in the world. You don't need money to do good things. If you want to call yourself a philanthropist, call yourself a philanthropist, or just call yourself a good person.
Nicely put. All right, so here are the questions that you've been waiting for.
Oh, no.
I know. A ton of stress. What is the best job you've ever had, Chaz Ebert?
The best job I've ever had is the job I have right now.
Which is?
Which is being an ambassador for the FEC principles. Now, my day job is also running RogerEbert.com, a movie review site. I'm very fortunate that we have so many good film critics who work with us, and so many really good people who work with us. But they know that I value people who do good works. And so a lot of them also actually do. I just love going out and being an ambassador for making the world better.
You are a living and breathing example of that. What is the worst job you've ever had?
The worst job I've ever had was... That's one I can't answer. I can't think of a job that...
You've, I don't even think as I've a had kid.
Any good. I don't think I've had any bad
good.
Jobs.
What makes you happiest?
The thing that makes me happiest is renting a villa somewhere, sometimes maybe in the Italian countryside, having my family there, my grandchildren, my son and daughter, my partner.
Me?
And no.
Oh.
Well, when Roger was alive, it was Roger, of course. And we put on plays for each other. We have dinner or sitting around a big table with people that I love having dinner. That makes me the happiest. I love that.
Do you miss him every day?
Of course, yeah, I do. And you know what? The thing that surprises me the most is all the letters and emails that I still get.
Really?
13 years after he passed away.
Mm.
Every single day I get something from someone who tells me one of his reviews that made a difference to them, or something he said that's very funny. They like that too. Or...
Was he very funny?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In fact, I thought that he and Gene Siskel, that Roger and Gene could have been like Abbott and Costello or someone.
They were on Saturday Night Live once.
Yeah, yeah. I think maybe even more than once. But
really? Yeah.
But they were very funny.
And they reviewed, if I remember the episode, they reviewed the performers on Saturday Night Live, giving them a thumbs up or thumbs down. And commented.
Yeah.
What is the best thing for you about...
But can I tell you one thing?
Yeah.
I know this is your show, your questions.
That's fine.
But I want to tell you the best thing about Roger.
Yeah.
He was so generous. He was so kind, profoundly good. And I told him that the universe played a trick on him, that he had a job that was called critic, which meant... You usually think of a critic as being someone who's going to say something negative or do something negative. When he was actually so kind, he did so many things. He would buy books or pay for, you know, school for someone. Or he did so many really kind, generous things that people
every
never...
Day, yeah.
And he didn't want to publicize them. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was the best thing about him, his goodness.
And clearly he inspired you.
We inspired each other.
That's, yeah.
Yeah.
I could see that. The best thing for you about Chicago?
You know, I love Chicago because Chicago, first of all, I love being in the theater district that we have here. You know, I'm friends with some of the actors from Steppenwolf.
Sure.
And they said the thing that was good about Chicago is, in Chicago, if you're an actor, you can be in a play because we have so much theater here.
We do,
you
yeah.
You don't have to wait for it to be some big thing that goes to Broadway that, you know, maybe only a few people. They said you can really practice your craft here. That's good. I love our lakefront. I love all the restaurants that we have. I love that the friends that I went to school with, I'm still friends with them from high school, and it's a small group, but the thing I like about them, they're each active in their neighborhood, doing something for children or doing something for elders. I love that people, there is a spirit of philanthropy here, and I don't mean just money, I mean doing good deeds.
Right. Now I need to ask you the most important question.
Okay.
Very personal.
All right.
Do you ever go to the Gene Siskel Theater?
Not only do I go to the Gene Siskel Theater, but I'm thinking of holding an event there.
Really?
Yeah.
What kind of event?
Oh my God, we can't...
Yes.
We can't end the show without me saying the FEC Awards are April 4th, 2026, at the Ritz-Carlton. We thought of holding them at the Siskel Center, but no, the Ritz-Carlton is the appropriate place.
That's fine.
Because
that's fine.
We're going to
Can the public get tickets to be there?
Yes. There'll be plenty of of ways for ways, people to buy tickets.
And
yes.
We will promote that as well. The name of the book, It's Time to Give a Feck. You are an incredible, incredible inspiration, and ambassador is exactly the right word. I suggest you're an ambassador for love. Chaz Ebert, thank you so much. And what a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you. It's great being here with you, Steve.
I hope you had a good time.
Thank you so much, Steve. I loved it. I had a great time.
That's a wrap from Booth 46 at Pederino's, where the loop comes to life. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, keep the conversation going and keep exploring Chicago.